Space between you, please split, and there are available seats here on over the first lines. All right, my name is Giorgio Sardo, and it's a pleasure for me to kick off this mix and to talk about HTML5. Like, are you excited about what we just showed in the keynote? Yeah, right? That's great stuff. So I've been working on HTML5 for a few years now. I work on many of the demos that you see in the keynote. I'm the one that has fun with it. I work with communities. I met many of you in the past, and I travel the world, and I get feedbacks from community, good, bad, neutral. I work with the IE team and with many partners, and that's a great pleasure for me. Before working on HTML5, I also work on Silverlight. In particular, I work on Silverlight, like the first versions, like when it was still version 1. I'm not sure if you remember it. It was like JavaScript at that time. And maybe some of you remember that I also work on Silverlight for mobile, before actually we ship Windows Phone 7. So to me, it's a great pleasure today to talk about HTML5 for Silverlight developers. Now, what about you? Like, how many of you are Silverlight developers? Great, excellent. I think it's like everyone. There is a ratio 1 to 1,000. This is not really fair. And this is great. This session is exactly for you. Today, we will talk about HTML5, but as a Silverlight developer, like Microsoft loves Silverlight, right? And I'm sure you do love Silverlight. And you love the tools, and you love Visual Studio, and Expression, and everything that comes with it. Now, all of the world is talking about HTML5. So what's the thing? Like, why? Why is everybody screaming HTML5? And so in this session, we're trying to look at HTML5 from the point of view of a Silverlight developer. This is a technical session. We're not going to get into like the 400-level details of HTML5. I'm not going to make new announcement, so I want to set expectations. And also, there's not going to be any fight, guns, weapons between Silverlight and HTML5 in this session. It's all about love, right? And I'm Italian, so love resonates well with me. So is there any journalist in this room? Mary Jo Foley? No? Anyone? Perfect. You're more than welcome to listen to this session. So why don't we start explaining what HTML5 is? Dean and Steven talk about HTML5, actually about native HTML5. When we look at the HTML5 term, today is actually abused, meaning HTML5, honestly, is really the first specification, the one on the left. And then there are a lot of other specifications. And if you think about this, like there are many working groups in W3C, in ECMAScript, in IETF, that are working on hundreds of specifications. HTML5 is one of those. Right now it's in work in draft, but Microsoft believes that it's ready. It's ready to go to last call, which is the future complete, early May of this year. So we're getting closer. But as you look at the other specifications that we refer to today as HTML5, you can see that they fit into different categories. So some of those has just been published, submitted, so they're still like ideas. Others are work in draft, meaning we are working on it with W3C members. Others are already recommendations, so it's safe to use them. They will not change, and they're already implemented in most browsers. Keep this in mind, because it's good to keep innovating, and Microsoft is innovating, but we also want to do it in a responsible way. Today, we're going to talk about those specifications that are available today in IE9 as well as other browsers. We want you to get you ready today. In the other sessions at Mix, we will also talk about what's coming in the future. Now, as Silverlight developers, you know that the Silverlight brand actually includes several technologies. So there is XAML, right? It's the syntax to draw the graphic and much more than that. Then you have managed languages, C# and all of the others that you use to code against XAML. And lastly, you have the .NET APIs. Now, in the browser world, we actually have HTML, SVG, CSS as different way to do markup. They might be similar to XAML in some way, but there are three different languages. And then you have JavaScript that describes is the de facto language for the web. And lastly, web apps. Web apps means all of the APIs that you consume using JavaScript. Well, when you look at those side by side, you actually realize that Silverlight shouldn't compete with HTML5. Silverlight is part of the browser. Silverlight is an extension to HTML5. And Silverlight provides things that HTML5 cannot provide today. If you think about it, HTML5 exists today thanks to plugins. Right? My sounds confusing, but web standards today are like the way they are because we had Silverlight, because we had Flash, and because we had other plugins in the past. And today, Silverlight is still extending things that HTML5 is not ready yet for. And we will have a look at some of these scenarios. Obviously, there is another component. There is the component of offline application with Silverlight. But this session is going to be about web applications, so we're going to talk about the online stuff. And then, obviously, there is another component. This is equally important, which is the frameworks. So frameworks like jQuery, like Modernizer, you probably heard these more and more because they're becoming the de facto way to build or to simplify the development of HTML5 applications. And we will look at some of those as well. Now, before starting talking about HTML5, I'd like to show you a few demos. And those are projects that I built in the last few months. Let's start with this one from BMW. So BMW wanted to create an experience to showcase their car of the future. And what they did, working with EMC, is a 3D version of this car where you can spin it around and look at the performance. Like, this is very smooth, right? You can move to the night mode, and you still have all the night. You can enable, for example, the air, or you can open the doors. And this is running in pure HTML5, right? Right-click, there's no plugin to this. So this gives you an idea of what's possible today. Then, Pirates Love Daisies. Have you seen this before? No? Yes? So this is an awesome game, and this is probably the application I spend more time testing. So Grant Skinner is a well-known Silverlight developer. He's a well-known Flash developer. Sorry, Grant. In the past, he built a lot of Flash applications. And we asked Grant, can you try to build an HTML5 game and tell us your experience? And so this is what Grant put together. And I think it's pretty awesome, right? So you have your own parrots. You can locate your parrots around the browser here. And then you say, next wave of... you can hear the sound here. Next wave of all of these little creatures that are coming. And the whole thing keeps going, and it becomes more complex. And you see that, apart from the funny music in the background, there is a composition here of many layers, many elements. The interactivity is very rich. And again, this is pure HTML5. Because of the hardware acceleration, it runs even better in i9. Although the markup is ready for any browser. This one is one of my favorite ones. So you can see that I'm kind of navigating into this 3D room. See the performance? This is pure JavaScript code. This is the code coming from one genius, Gerard Fernandez in France. He wrote this little framework that allows you to build like HTML5 application and to do this 3D stuff. And this framework has already been used by many websites to create their online experiences. And again, look, 60 frames per second, and you get like the experience of a 3D application using the languages that you already know today. And the last one was quite funny, actually. This is from Mike Tompkins. He's an a cappella artist. As you can see, each of these boxes is a different video. And each video has a different audio track. And when you combine all of these audio tracks together, you get a song. So there is no instruments in this demo. It's all of his voice, right? And I can, for example, show you, I can turn down some of the volumes here, right? So now I have only the violin, or I can bring up the synths. And I can do animation, so you have like all of the physics engine in place. You can bring all of the track. You can zoom on one specific element. This is quite impressive. And again, pure HTML5. All right. So I hope I gave you an idea of what's possible today. Now let's have a look to how we can build this. This is the list of features that I'm going to cover today. As I said, it's just an hour. I know that you guys would love to spend a day on this, but I decided to pick those features because I think they're more relevant to you as Silverlight developers. And we will look at how existing HTML5 features are similar to existing Silverlight features. Notice on the left that these features are coming from different specifications. So make no confusion. HTML5 is markup, is canvas, is audio and video. But SVG, CSS, those are different specifications. And we're going to look at a few of those. Before we start, and this is actually a question that I got even before starting the session, is what about tools, right? Visual Studio is awesome, but can we build HTML5 using Visual Studio? And the answer is yes. Starting from the Service Pack 1, Visual Studio supports IntelliSense for HTML5. Expression Web supports IntelliSense. Expression Web gives you also the super preview. And that now, like from a very recent build, you can compare i9 to i8 to Firefox to Chrome to Safari running on Mac in the cloud. You can run your site side by side on all of these browsers just using Expression Web Super Preview. There are also other tools. Like our competitors are building tools. So like Adobe Illustrator has been is a tool that has been outputting SVG for many years. There is also, you see that little mountain? That's Inkscape. So it's a free tool from the community and allows you to operate with SVG. We don't have a lot of tools for Canvas today. And that's why Mike Swanson created the IE2 Canvas, and we will talk about this later. When it comes to tool, I want to be very transparent. I wish we had more. I think there is an opportunity to build better tools for HTML5 applications. I think that what we have now is ready, and as a matter of fact, you can see that we build amazing applications using those tools, and I think that over in the future, you should expect more and more and more. And obviously, Microsoft knows how to do tools. All right, so let's start from the code now. I'm sure you've seen this slide like many times. I'm sure you already know about the doc type, so I'll be quick on this. In Silverlight, you have a manifest, and the manifest gives the information to the browser or to the container about the specification of the app. Well, the doc type in HTML5 is kind of the manifest. What you see here is probably the template that you saw for years using Visual Studio. What you can do in HTML5 is reduce the first line, so we just use doctype HTML. You can remove the namespace, that's an optional element. You can simplify the meta tag with the content type to just char set, that's the information that you want. And eventually you can add the language for accessibility tools. That's it. If your page has this template, all of the browsers will know that this is a page built in HTML5. The next specification I'm going to talk about is SVG. SVG stands for Scalable Vector Graphic and allow you to do graphic, right, on the web, no surprise. Somehow it's similar to XAML, in particular to the XAML graphic, because they're both XML languages. And so you see in this page that I have two snippets of code, and actually the code, like if you replace Canvas with SVG, it's more likely the same. SVG can be hosted like inline in the HTML, so you have your HTML page and then you have your SVG snippet inline, and you can obviously have more than one snippet. You can embed it as an image, so you reference it as it was an image to an external file, or you can use an iframe. When it comes to the shapes that SVG gives you, those are very similar to the shape in XAML, and I spent some time looking at the differences between the two. The only one that I found so far is that SVG, the names of the shapes in SVG don't make sense in English. So if you think about it, like now, I know you know Silverlight. So in Silverlight, for example, you have rectangle. In SVG, it's just rect, right? So that's probably one of the main differences. Everything else is pretty much the same. SVG supports text, supports all of the colors, like solid, the gradients. Same way as XAML, so you can do linear, you can do radial, and you have the color stops. The syntax and the names might be different, but the future is the same. And then you can obviously embed raster images inside SVG. So let's have a look to a few demos here. And as I said, I'm going to use Visual Studio because this is the tool I use every day. This is an example of SVG hosted in the page. See, a very easy snippet. So what is this going to render? Any guess? Compile it in your mind and then tell me what you see. All right. So let's preview this in the browser. Yeah. I pick a random flag. Now, what you can do in SVG, which is similar to XAML, is the concept of viewbox, right? Because this is scalable, I want to scale this. And you can do this using the viewbox property. So I set the beginning and say 600, 300. And then as I set up the viewbox, That SVG snippet is going to fill all of the space. So again, viewbooks in SVG is very similar to the viewbooks in XAML, and you can see that they readapt the content to fill the space. On the shapes, you have path. And because I'm not good at writing the path, I'm going to use a tool here called Expression Design. Guess what? And I'm going to try to draw a path. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, this is an art, right? In case it wasn't clear. I'm sure there are better designers in this room. I'm going to copy the XAML. I'm moving here on my page. And in particular, I want to take this information, the data, right? So there is this huge string. I don't know what these numbers are, but I just know that if I copy this number into the D, into my SVG snippet, right? So I just copy the same number, and I run this page. Voila. I have my heart. So the way the two languages calculate shapes is pretty similar. So hopefully this will be helpful in the future. You saw this morning in the keynote the SVG Anim application, right? I have here like a frame of that animation. So this is like girl built entirely using SVG. And if you look at the code behind, it might look scary, right? I mean, if you couldn't compile the rectangle, this is tough. No, but seriously, like it's after a while you can just visualize it matrix style. But it's made of shapes, right? So this can be very complex. It doesn't need to be easy as rectangles and circles. And so let's try to do something more complex. So let's go back here to expression design. And this is something that I love. I used this years ago, and it's great now to repurpose it. So it's an XAML duck, right? And what I'm going to do this time is, again, I copied XAML. This is more complex than just one shape, and there are colors and there are gradients. So what I did was build in a little tool. It's called XAML to SVG. If we look at the code, I'm taking an XSL file, so an XML transform, and I'm using this transform from XAML syntax to SVG syntax. And you can see that I have here a few rules that define the various geometry and the various elements and the colors. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to copy my XAML code, right, into Visual Studio. And then my program is going to take my input in XAML and it's going to generate an output in SVG. So let's set up this as a start project. Let's run this very fancy application. Okay, the duck reborn in SVG. Let's close this. Now, if I go to the output folder and I hit refresh, I have my SVG snippet here. So I take my SVG snippet back to my page, copy and paste, and if everything works fine, voila. So this is my duck that reborn in SVG. And as you can see now, this is SVG, right? So it's pretty similar. Actually, it's very similar. And it's cool. I love the duck. Now, XAML allow you to use more than just shapes. You can, for example, have resource dictionaries. And similar to the resource dictionary, you can do the same in SVG. This is actually quite different. SVG handles it using the defs. That's where you define your resource. And then you use it using the use. One of the differences is that in XAML, when you define the resources, they apply to the context of the object where you're putting the resources. So you can define several resources, and it can apply just to that scope. In SVG, the defs are global. So all of the SVG files on that page will look at the defs. The most interesting thing is that you can also use CSS rules, to style SVG, same way you do with HTML. You also have transforms. So those are the transforms that you already know. So let's have a look to a quick demo here. This page, for example, starts with my SVG, and then you see that I'm defining a set of resources. The G stands for group. So it's a way to group several elements together. And then you see that I define a few linear gradients, and then below I have some transform and some path. I have various properties. So let's minimize this. I have a linear gradient here that I'm using also as a resource. And then outside of the devs, this is where you have your elements, I'm using the use to import the first monster and to use monster as an object. The second example instead shows you how to use a resource to style an existing object. So this time I'm using the URL syntax. And when I run this, I get a beautiful monster playing with a little ball. As I said, you can also do transform using SVG. And I need to thank Yohai for this demo. So this time, my SVG page, my SVG snippet, includes only one definition. It's a custom shape made of several paths. And you can see that it's empty. So if I show this in the browser, it will not show anything. In JavaScript, I'm basically getting the SVG container, and then I'm adding 100 shapes. And if you look at the way I add the shapes, I'm still using exactly the same syntax. So use, and then I set up set attribute namespace with my custom shape. The reason this code is probably new to you is that SVG is a different DOM from the JavaScript DOM. And so a few things are slightly different. I also have here an animation. Oh, and by the way, notice that I'm adding an event listener to my SVG object. So everything you draw in SVG is an object. You can click, you can have events, same way you do in HTML. I also have an animation here. If you're not familiar with this syntax, it means set intervals keep like iterating over this code again and again every 300 milliseconds. And in my sample, I'm basically changing the XY coordinates, and I'm also changing the transform to rescale quickly. Now, if I run this in the browser, this is kind of like I don't know what this is. USB keys flying around. It's kind of like raining around. And if I'm fast enough to click on an object, right, which I'm not too fast. Come on. All right. Well, you can play this on because I'm going to give you the source code. So you can spend as much time as you want to click on an object. But believe me, it will give you an event. And it will keep smiling at you. So this is the power of SVG. So in the past, it's been used for grass and from boring stuff. Today, SVG can be very powerful. Then there is this other specification called HTML5. And one of the great things about HTML5 is the canvas element. The way I like to define the canvas element, and please don't tweet this, but it's a powerfully stupid control. It's powerful because many of the scenarios that you saw in the keynote and the demo on HTML5 are using the canvas. It's stupid. Because, as you can see, that's it. Canvas, you define it, and you cannot put anything inside it. It's not like the canvas in Civet where you can add objects and you can position it. What goes inside the canvas is just the fallback. So in case the browser doesn't support the canvas, it will show that code. It's very powerful, however, because it gives you access to the pixels, right? So in Civet, you have the writable image, where you can get all of the pixel, rework on it, and then republish it there. Same thing with the canvas. So it's a mix of the rewritable image in Silverlight plus the canvas in Silverlight. You also have new tags called audio and video that allow you to do audio and video on a web page. As you know, the standard doesn't define a codec. And so different browsers use different strategies. In Microsoft, we honestly don't care about the codec itself. We care about delivering a great experience to US developers and to end users, right? We want to reach as many end users as possible, and we want them to have a great experience on the web. And that's why we decided to implement H.264, because today is the de facto codec that is available on most of the machines, including the hardware. Like many hardware cameras are optimized for H.264. We also support WebM if the codec is installed on the machine, and obviously we support MP3 for the audio. My favorite features about audio and video tag in HTML is that you can do the composition with HTML. So it's not just a box, but you can take that and play with it. And I will show you a quick demo shortly. Something you cannot do at this point with HTML5 is DRM video. There is no way to protect it. Right now, all of the websites using HTML5 are streaming are sending the video, and eventually you can download that video. It's not protected. You cannot do live streaming. Smooth streaming. This is something that is not yet available in HTML5. And also, it's not possible to go full screen. This actually has been one of the initial challenges with the plugins as well, the ability to go full screen. And this is where Civilet comes, right? Civilet gives all of these features. Actually, Civilet has an awesome experience on audio and video. I don't want to say which one is better. I think they're both great options. From one side, Civilet gives you today an excellent experience. From the other side, the HTML5 specification is evolving. And so there are ongoing conversations about those features that are missing. And probably at some time, they will catch up again with the plugins. So let's have a look to a few demos here. Let's start from the canvas, right? So I have my page, and you can see that I have my little canvas snippet. And then in the code, I'm getting a query selector on the canvas. I'm checking if the canvas is supported in the browser. I'm getting the context, which is similar to the graphics element in Civilet. And then I can draw rectangles and change the styles and everything. Now, if you run this demo, probably in Italy, they will tell you, oh, wow, this is hard, right? And it is. If you keep looking at the white rectangle in the middle, that's hard. And if you don't believe me, we can do more than this. So what I have in this machine is Adobe Illustrator. And I installed on Adobe Illustrator a little tool that Mike Swanson from the Mix Online team is the guy behind all of the magic that happened earlier. He built this little plugin to Adobe Illustrator that takes your Adobe Illustrator file and exports it to Canvas. So let me show you. For example, I have a rectangle, and I'm a great designer, so I'm going to put a few gradients. And then I export this to Canvas. So this feature here doesn't exist natively in Adobe Illustrator. It's something that is coming with the plugin of Mike. So I hit save. And what the plugin does is generate this page using Canvas. So if I inspect this with the browser, you can see that this is a Canvas element, right? And if I go to script, you can actually see the code that you need to write that element, right? So it's automatically generating all of the points and all of the code that you need to write that. And actually, this can be fairly complex. For example, I have here another example of the space with also some animation. So using some very smart way to do animation. And I export this again to another page. It's taking some time. It's generating in the background my page. And now as I run this, again, this is another example of Canvas, right? Everything built using that plugin. And if we look at the script, look how much code the script generated, right? So this is, again, a very smart script. So if you need to prototype or build some application with the Canvas, I strongly encourage you to have a look at this. And there is also a library called IE Canvas Animation that does a lot of behind-the-scenes work for you. So you don't need to spend too much time trying to understand how to do the easing effect or all of the animations. This is like a wrapper on top of that. The next demo I want to show you is simple. It's just a player, right? So this is the video, HTML5 video. Every time we talk about the capabilities of the, from a technical point of view, so to do something different, I'd like to show you how the browser shows the video. So you can see that here, as I mouse over the video on the bottom, it's showing like a scroll bar. And if you look closely, it also gives you the percentage of how much video has been already prefetched, allows you to change the volume, etc. And also this interface readapts, right? So if I resize the window, look what happened at some point, right? It simplified the interface, and now I have only a pause button and a play button. If I right-click on the video, I get a small menu, and I can pause the video, I can mute it, I can save the video, so no DRM here, and I can change the speed. This is actually a great feature, so you can go faster and slower. So if you're watching the Channel 9 live session, you can go faster on this specific session now, or slower if I'm talking too quickly. Each browser is doing this control in a different way. The user agent doesn't define how the browser should behave. The most interesting thing is that, as I said, the video and the audio are integrated with the page, with the rest of the standards. So if you don't like this, you can create your own player. So you saw earlier the Mike Tompkins, for example, application with all of those 16 videos in the page. I want to show you just like the technique behind that. So this time I have a video. And the video is displayed on, so I'm not showing the video on the page. And then I have a canvas. In my code, I have a set interval that is looping every 16 milliseconds and is drawing on the canvas the current frame from the video at different positions. So this is the source destination position. And so as I play this this app, you will see that I have now Mike singing, and you see five different videos. The reality is that it's just one video, but then we are reanimating and we are integrating and doing the composition with the rest of the page. So this is a very good best practice if you're building this type of application. All right, so we look at SVG, we look at HTML5. What about CSS 3? One of the things that when I started working on Civilet, I remember was amazing, was all of the layout features that you have in XAML, right? You have the grid, you have the canvas, you have the stack panel. And for years, this has been a huge challenge for HTML developers. Like, you want to build a grid? Well, initially it was all tables, right? You remember the time where we had all tables? And then they say, oh no, the tables are horrible, you need to use divs. And actually building grids with div is complex, because you have all of these floating elements around the page. Well, I'm happy to say that Microsoft submitted a new standard to W3C, and it's called CSS3 Grids. So the future of HTML5 will allow you to use grids in the browser. And this is what you saw earlier in the keynote. So you build the grid the same way you're doing XAML. You define your columns and the rows and everything. We also talk about Flexbox this morning. And the idea of Flexbox is that it flex, right? So it's pretty much the same you have with the stack panel in Silverlight. We talk about the viewbox, and lastly, like absolute positioning. What you do in Canvas using Silverlight is actually just absolute positioning in HTML5. HTML5 also supports rich and advanced typography. And I'm sure that typography is an important element for you. Talking with many Silverlight developers in the past, I heard that for some time, typography was a challenge, right? You want to show the text in the best way. And what we do, for example, in i9, is showing like the pixel-perfect font. And we can use custom fonts. So this is like the syntax, the font face syntax that you use to embed WOF fonts. This is a new standard, again, submitted by Microsoft and Mozilla to W3C. Lastly, CSS gives you transforms. And wait a second, didn't we already talk about transforms? Well, we talk about SVG transforms that apply to SVG, but you also have CSS transforms that apply to HTML. The syntax is very similar, and this is one of the cases where we need to do more work in the future to make sure that everything converges together. The transforms today are supported only using the vendor prefixes, in particular because the specification is not quite ready yet, and so each browser is using different implementation or different features. Let's have a look at some of these demos. So I'm going to start with the grid. And I'm going to show you quickly the page in i9. And i9 doesn't show a grid because the grid is a very new specification that we just submitted. And so you will need to use the platform preview of i10 for this. So the same markup in i10 will look like this. And you can see that you can imagine this grid being built around, right? If you look at the code, it's quite similar to XAML. You have a display to grid, which is telling to the browser to use a grid model. Then you can define columns. This is similar to the column definitions in XAML. Rows, this is row definition. And then each of the elements of the page is basically saying, I want to fit in row one, column one. Something I notice is that they start counting from one. I think in Silverlight you start counting from zero. So this is something to keep in mind. And you can also do the span, so you can also go span across multiple grids. The Flexbox, again, let's run this on the platform preview, is similar to the stack panel. So you have here like four elements. I can, for example, let me show you what happens when I resize the page. You see that everything just gets hide. But I can say, no, I want to flex some element, and in particular the two in the middle. So as I start shrinking, the two elements in the middle, they shrink together with my window. And obviously, you can justify the alignment, et cetera. So very similar to what you do today with the stack panel horizontal vertical positioning. The typography is actually one of my favorite features. You see here I have the same code snippet that you saw earlier. I'm using a WOF font, And the way I embed it into the page is using the font face property. And then this is a very little demo where you see, like, I have an input, I have a div, and as a type, I'm updating my title. So let me show you this in action. Say, ciao, Nix. How are you? I love HTML5. So this is a custom font. In case you cannot see this, I'm doing animation using the transform, so the MS transform, and I'm scaling to a value of 14. So as I scale, this font is going to get bigger. If you're still not seeing this, I can zoom more, so I can keep zooming. So do you see what I9 is doing with this font? It's like it's pixel perfect. Like, you cannot get any better than this, right? And again, this is not an image. I can select the font, and you have all of the exact resolution of that font in your application. So these obviously allow great scenarios where you can really improve the usability of your applications. But one note, if you try this application on other browsers that support WOF, which probably are most of them today, it will work. However, each browser has a different rendering engine. So I invite you to have a look how this renders, I don't know, on other browsers. Pick one, any. All right, so we talk about a little bit about CSS3. But what about the language, right? We all love .NET. Do we love .NET? Who is using .NET and is loving it? Like, no surprise, like everyone, right? And then we go back to the web space and we have JavaScript. Oh, horrible. Like, you don't have objects. How do you do code in JavaScript? Well, let's have a look to what we really have in HTML5. We have the classic JavaScript, and then we also have a lot of APIs exposed by the DOM. The DOM is the document object model. I'm listing just 4 of those here. Actually, there are 20 more. Recently, JavaScript got updated, so got upgraded. And this is what we call ECMAScript 5, which is an addition of new features to the JavaScript language that simplify the development of the applications. When you take all of this together, there are also frameworks or libraries that simplify even further the development. For example, jQuery. So I received the question, is jQuery HTML5? Well, jQuery is a framework that is using, HTML5. And we will talk about this more in detail. So we will show like how jQuery abstract on HTML5, on JavaScript and ECMAScript, and basically fallbacks to other methods for browsers that don't support ECMAScript 5. Something that is really critical, so I know this slide looks ugly, but the point is set timers, a set interval, are your best friend when you build HTML5 applications. I think that there is no application in the world building HTML5, like something that is animating, without using those two methods. In Sivrid, you have the concept of threads. So you have a UI thread, and then you have like the other thread where you run the code. And you know that if you want to update the UI, you might need to use like the dispatch timer, right? In the web, on the web, you have one thread. So if you're working on JavaScript, you have a JavaScript loop that is going on, in the UI, it will get stuck. Like, it doesn't update dynamically as it does in Sivrid. There is no way to do the dispatch timer automatically. And so set timers and set interval are the way to break that model and to create a synchronous application. You saw I was using those earlier, and I will show you shortly how to use them again. So let me show you very quickly something about ECMAScript 5. One of the big feature requested from developers is the ability of serializing JSON. Previously, you used libraries. ECMAScript 5 defined a JSON object in the browser. So you see, I don't have any library here, and I can serialize or deserialize objects using the JSON object. The next one that no one ever talked about, but actually coming from .NET, this is quite handy, is a lot of new addition to the array. So array is a JavaScript object, right? It's existed for years. What ECMAScript 5 introduced are new methods. For example, you can do for each. And then inside the for each, you can have sort of lambda expression. Or you can iterate and say, I want only some of these, Or you can say, I want to map each value with the previous one. Or I want to filter in this array collection only those elements that are minor of 50. So there are a lot of little things that help you with like daily development. There will be other sessions about this content, so we'll give more in-depth details about ECMAScript 5. Another topic that is interesting is once you have JavaScript, right? We don't all build games. Somebody builds business application, and you need to access a server, need to get some data, and process the data, and show a grid, show something. So how do we do it securely? How do we do a cross-domain request? In Silverlight, you have the XML file, cross-domain policy.xml, and you define your rule here. In HTML5, it's very similar. Actually, the syntax is pretty much the same. However, instead of using the XML file, we use HTTP headers. And this is something that is across all browsers, is the standard way. So when the browser makes the request to the server, it's saying, hey, I'm Contoso, and I'm doing a safe cross-domain request to NWTrader. NWTrader will allow this request only by appending the access control allow origin HTTP header, right? So if the browser doesn't get this header, it will say, this connection is not secure, so it will just ignore the response. If the server sends this header, then you know that this is a trusted connection. And there is no cookies, so we strip out every content that we don't need here. There is no header access, so you cannot write other headers on top of this. It's really like a sort of handshake here. I heard, like, what about the storage, right? I'm getting data, and I want to cache data locally. How can I do the storage in HTML5? And in Silverlight, you have the isolated storage. HTML5 gives you something very similar. It's called web storage. And the concept is similar. So you have an hash table, you have pairs of key and values. One of the differences is the limit per domain. So, for example, in IE9, we allow you to put 5 megabytes of data per domain. In Silverlight, you can extend it. This is still not possible in the browsers today. I'm not sure if this is something that you need. We will look into it. So let's have a look to a few demos here. And in particular, I stole some code from Facebook, right? So you might be familiar with this. Let's set the context. This is the scenario where I want to send a message to my brother, to Alessandro. He's in Italy, he's probably sleeping now, and I want to write him something. Ciao Ale, come va? Everything all right? Etc. Then I hit the send button, and in the meantime, my connectivity got lost. I don't know, maybe I detach the cable or the Wi-Fi get disconnected. What happens? What happens today? 404, or you see some sort of error, like the page is not online anymore, like you lost connectivity. And then you hit refresh, and you need to retype all of the message again. This is one of the most terrible experiences to me as a developer. What you can do with HTML5 is actually catching that event, storing the data locally, and then when I'm back online, I'm sending the message. So let me show you the code first. When I click the button, I'm basically saying, am I online? And I'm using the Windows Navigator Online property. If yes, then I send the message immediately. If not, I'm saving my message into the local storage. So local storage is the syntax to access the local storage of the browser. And then you see below that I'm attached to the online event from the document. So as soon as the page comes back online, it will trigger this online event. And at that point, I will take the local storage, I will get my message, and I will send the message. So let me show you this in action. Let's say I'm connected, I hit send, everything worked, congratulations. Now let's replay this. And let's go offline. So I'm going work offline. I send, and now the application knows that I don't have network, and I said to the user, hey, wait a second. Instead of showing you a 404, I tell you that I'm offline. And then as soon as I go back online, look what happened in the middle. Congratulations, your message is sent. So I picked this demo because actually Facebook is already using this mechanism. So if you try to send message, you can test it on their page. They're already using HTML5 to do this little trick. And this is actually nice to have, and it's quite easy to build. The other demo that I want to show you is something that Microsoft has been working on for a while. It's a new standard to profile your application. It's called Windows.Performance. So with tools, the tools in Visual Studio allow you to monitor, like to profile a separate application. How can you profile a website? Well, there are two ways. Either you write a lot of JavaScript that sit in the middle and set events to your application, or you can use this. So the syntax is very simple. It's Windows.Performance.Timing, and it also allows you to export it to JSON. So back to my site, I open the developer tools, I go to the console, I type Windows.Performance.Timing, and you see that I get this information for free, right? I didn't need to do anything to Bing as well. And you can add this to your watch list. What these numbers are is like a profiling of how long Internet Explorer took to load this page. So you know how much time was spent, for example, on the network, on the prefetch, on the DOM, et cetera, et cetera. And because we're doing this like inside the browser, this doesn't have a cost. It comes for free. It doesn't affect the end result. And so we came up with this feature at the beginning of the i9 development in one of the platform previews. I'm happy to say that now it's a standard. So other browsers will eventually adopt this as well. All right, so we talk about some of the APIs. And as I said at the beginning, there are also frameworks that allow building on top of these APIs. And obviously, frameworks simplify your life. There are hundreds of frameworks. There isn't any specific reason I choose this one here in this slide. But I want to show you three of them. The first one is jQuery. And to show you this, I'd like to show a great application that John Papa, Corey Schumann, and Dan Wallin developed. So John Papa asked those two great Silverlight MVPs to build an experiment. He did an experiment, and he asked, why don't we try to build an HTML5 app and try to understand what it means to build an HTML5 app? And this is the website that they came up with. And so what I can do in this site is I have several boxes. Each box, like as I drag and drop them around, you can see that it's refreshing automatically, so it's getting the JSON data from the server. And it's also changing its layout, its template, depending on the size. Then you see that there are charts in Canvas or pies in SVG. And if I look to the code here, you can see that what's interesting, like we didn't drive this project, we let them work on this, is that they use a few frameworks from jQuery, from Modernizer to Raphael, which is a very interesting SVG libraries that simplify the day-to-day action, the day-to-day job. For example, Modernizer, you see what it does, right? It's actually a framework that checks if the future is available. A trick here, if you go to the developer tools F12 format JavaScript, voila, now you get your all nice JavaScript. And so this checks for like availability of features. It's a great framework to have if you're building an HTML5 app. By the way, John is going to show this application more in detail, and they're going to share the lesson learned in this application on the Silverlight TV soon. But the main feedback was that some things are very easy to do in HTML5. Others took more time just because the development model is different. But end to end, I think you can see that at the end, this website is pretty neat. The next demo I'd like to show is the RxJS framework. And I need to thank Bart for this demo. So Bart is going to have a session tomorrow where he's going to go even more in depth into this content. And the idea is that because of the asynchronously problem that we mentioned earlier in JavaScript, let's say, for example, that I want to make requests to Wikipedia. I have a text box here, and I want to search for, I don't know, Internet Explorer, and I get the results back from Wikipedia. If I implement this on each single keystroke, I would need to make, I don't know, 10 requests for each keystroke, right? What happens here instead is that I'm setting a window, and then after something doesn't happen in that window, then I send the request. How do I do it? Well, this is very smart code. This library called RxJS allows you to use reactive extensions. And so what you can do is get in your input element, and then you say, I want to collect all of my events key up into an observable collection, right? And then out of that observable collection, I'm using the link style to say, I want to select the value. I want to throttle these values to a window of 500 milliseconds, and then I want to get the result from Wikipedia, and I want to show it only if it's different from the previous one. And then below, I'm basically subscribing, I'm doing the binding to that observable collection. So it's, the concept is, this is the reactive extensions, so it's similar to what you do in other languages, and now it's available in JavaScript as well. Again, if you're interested to this, I think it's awesome. Bart is going to give you more details. The last demo is from Nick Hill. So Nick Hill is the author of Script Sharp. How many of you have heard about Script Sharp? Okay, some of you. So I have the pleasure to say that Nick Hill will be here with us at Mix. He has some exciting news to say, so make sure to check out his session. But what I want to show you here is a web page. It's just an example of the Script Sharp library in action. So on this page, I have a canvas, and I have an image. That's it. I didn't write any other code. Then I have this project, and it's a C-sharp project, it's a Script-sharp project, with some C-sharp code. And what Script-sharp gives me is like a framework in C-sharp to code against jQuery. So you can see that I have like the jQuery wrapper there, and to code against HTML5. So I can create the canvas element using C-sharp. And here I'm doing like, I'm getting the body, I'm getting children's, I have the sit interval. I'm doing exactly the same thing I would do in HTML5. But because it's C-sharp, it's faster, it's better, it's cleaner, it's more maintainable and everything. When I compile this code, so I'm building this solution, if I go back to the Script-sharp folder here and I hit refresh, you can see that that C-sharp code goes through the Script-sharp tool and that tool output JavaScript. So I'm generating JavaScript out of starting from C-sharp. And when I run this page, that little snippet, I have this, which you might remember. So I'm using the canvas to draw a car. And again, I built this application using C-sharp. So you can see how easy it is to move from C-sharp to JavaScript. And there are different frameworks that are supported by the Script-sharp framework. Nick here is going to give you more details soon. Now, you're probably thinking, oh, but, you know, in Silverlight, I have this other feature that is not in HTML5. And you're probably true. Silverlight has many features that are not standards yet. And that's why we created Silverlight in first place, right? It's to fill a gap. And then in the meantime, the standards evolved. In my session, the future of HTML5 on Thursday, I will try to walk you through what's going to happen in the future, what you should expect from the HTML5 spec. And we're going to talk about sockets, about database, about devices, and there's going to be some other surprise. Now, today we look at HTML5. I think you understand that the capabilities of building HTML5 applications. We look at some sample of hardware-accelerated HTML5 using Internet Explorer. If there is one message I want to give you is that I get a lot of time the question, should I use Silverlight or HTML5? I personally been a Microsoft developer for 10 years, and I'm sure that many of you have been happy Microsoft developers for even longer than that. And I'm sure that you know your customers better than anybody else. And so I'm not one to judge or to say which technology works better. I think HTML5 evolved a lot in the last year. Silverlight is a great option for media scenarios. For other scenarios, it's a great other option. You definitely know what your customer needs. I think you now understand what's possible with the frameworks, and so I trust that you will make the right decision. Personally, we believe that HTML5 is ready. I think that Microsoft is ready for HTML5. Now the question is, are you ready? Thank you. Is there any question? Okay, please, thanks. I can hear you. I will repeat the question. Okay. This is the future of HTML5. No. So the question is, what future do you see for HTML5 on mobile devices, right? So I think that this is the day one of Mix. So you saw earlier the fact that we announced that IE9 will be available in Windows Phone. I think HTML5 is the platform that goes, everywhere, right? It's the rich framework. It's already available today on different devices. When I think about the future, I think it's very important to make it right. It's not about rushing something and putting on a device and giving you the device saying, yes, we support HTML5. It's about supporting the standard correctly, supporting the performance that I expect you to expect from us, right? So when you see all of my demos running on IE9 on the desktop at 60 frames per second, the work that Microsoft is doing is to get the same performance on a mobile device. If we get that, then we'll be successful, and then you will be successful.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. Can we remove the music, please? Thanks.
Inline SVG support, is that totally cross-browser, or right now is it just IE9?
So the question is inline support available in all browsers? IE9 has been the first browser to implement it. When we look at SVG, all of the other browsers supported SVG only inside XHTML.
Okay.
Later, after we ship SVG into IE9, other browsers start catching up on this. And I think that today, most of the browsers support it. I think Firefox 4, starting from Firefox 4, Firefox was probably the last one to allow SVG only in XHTML, but my Firefox evangelist here tells me that Firefox 4 supports it. So
okay.
It's safe to say every browser supports SVG inline.
Are you backing off of Silverlight being a cross-operating system framework?
So the question is Silverlight a cross-operating?
Are you backing off on Silverlight continuing to be a cross-operating system framework?
So the question is, are you backing off on Silverlight being a cross-operating system framework? I don't know the answer to this, but the answer that I will give you is that regardless of the politics, right, what we really care is the developer experience. We want developer and user experience. We want developers to be able to offer to their users the best experience. And that's why we build HTML5, that's why we build Silverlight, and that's why we love both, and we give you a choice of what technology you want to use. Yes, please.
I think one of the things some Silverlight developers will sort of miss if they try out HTML5 are things like data binding. Is there anything in the HTML5 spec or anything upcoming that addresses this?
Yes. The question is, what about data binding? So the standards right now, particular JavaScript, has some kind of binding concept, but it's not quite similar to the one that you have in Silverlight. Frameworks like jQuery allow you to do data binding. There are other sessions at the conference that, for example, show you how to do data binding with jQuery templates. So you create your own data item template using HTML, and then you bind that to a data source using JavaScript or using, for example, jQuery plugins. If you think about it, not everything needs to be a standard, right? As soon as the standards like JavaScript allow a library to do that scenario, then I think we solve that.
Just wanted to also mention a knockout JS. I didn't notice it mentioned there. It's actually a framework. I know there's a talk on it later for people who are interested in MVVM.
Great. Thank you.
You guys might want to look at that.
Thank you.
My question is Silverlight a complete superset of the HTML5, or is there anything in HTML5 that you can't do using just Silverlight?
Is there anything that in HTML5 that you can't do in Silverlight? Well, you saw that there are similarities, there are differences. HTML5, I think, allow you to do integration, layering, composition between several technologies together. Silverlight is Silverlight, right? And if you want to access the DOM, you need to go through the DOM bridge and then access the page. So that's probably one of the big differences. When you use HTML5, you have this huge platform where everything's possible. There are things, as I showed during the presentation, that today you can do only in Silverlight. For example, the smooth streaming. It's not possible to do in HTML5. There are things in HTML5 that you probably cannot do in Silverlight. Some performance scenarios, some sort of the canvas, right? Canvas is quite different, the model between the canvas and Chew, and The canvas in HTML5 gives even more than what I showed you today. So I think the answer is yes. Like, both frameworks have their unique value props. Yes. So I'd like to thank you. If there is any other question, I'll take it offline. Thank you again.